I think you meant Tom Ratliff. Bartle. Okay, so this, I hope, is our last class on this particular subject. It's been a long, I think it's been about 15 weeks. Sorry. I get a little bit long-winded on subjects, and this is an important subject. But last week we covered we ended one and started on another of the drawers of the filing cabinet in this chapter on marriage. We talked about aliens and what happens to them when they come to Christ. And if you want the upshot of that, go listen to last week's lesson. The upshot was is that they should come to Christ as they are. Brethren, let each one remain with God in the state in which he was called. And we take that to mean that if you've been married and divorced prior to becoming a Christian, that you don't have to go back and fix that. In a way that some churches of Christ would require you to do. That brings us to another section, and that section is Virgins in Troubled Times. That's the third to the last section, if you will. Let's read this section of Scripture. It's in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 25 through 28. Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy. I suppose, therefore, that it is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you. And it actually continues a little bit, the next paragraph. But let's cover this one first. Again, Paul's opening up another drawer in this file cabinet on marriage and divorce in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. In this one, we see that there was a question about virgins and others. And Paul goes and says, first of all, when it says virgins here, we should be clear that this at this point it's not just speaking of ladies. Later on, it uses the term virgin, and it is speaking of ladies. But in this case, it's not a noun that is female specific. It could be either male or female, and it's not just meaning those who are not married or unmarried. It means those who have never been married, and that makes an assumption that we should be kind of clear on. That if you've never been married, you should be a virgin. that's what the Bible's teaching here in this particular verse, this particular word. So, and when it says others, it'll be clear later on when we speak that there. It's also going to be speaking of widows, and it's going to be speaking of divorced in this next section too. Paul starts by saying that he has no commandment from the Lord. So they apparently had a question, and he had an answer. He says, "I have no commandment for the Lord." He says, but then he says, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy. And we can look at Paul's apostle. Paul's inspired by God, inspired by the Holy Spirit. And so is this scripture or is it not scripture? Of course it's scripture, right? It's inspired scripture. The question is whether it's a command or not. And in this particular case, Paul says, I have no commandment from the Lord. Does that mean that we have no commandment from the Lord? What I take this to mean is that Paul is giving us his best advice as one who is inspired by God. And so we can take this as advice, as he's saying it. But what he's saying here is that I've been given, God has entrusted me with the gifts that he's entrusted me. He's entrusted me with the gospel, and I'm going to give you some advice. And the advice has to do partly with this thing in verse 26, that I suppose it is good because of the present distress that is good for a man to remain as he is. So Paul's saying, and in the end he's going to say, but if you don't take my advice and you want to get married, that's okay too. You haven't sinned. So Paul is going to give them some advice here based on his understanding of what's going on in the world. And he's saying to them, if you take my advice, you'll be happier at this point in time. And he's going to give reasons for that a little bit later. But the point of it is that it's advice. And he says, if you don't take my advice, you haven't sinned. And so let's just keep that in mind as we go through here. It's not a commandment. It's just really good advice. Paul addresses virgins in verses 26 and 27. Because of this present distress, they should remain as they are. So there seems to be a time limit on this advice. It seems to be limited to a time of times of distress. Are there ever times of distress besides the one he's talking about here? There are. There's not just this persecution. If this was indeed written around 56, around the time of Nero, that would be one persecution that the church suffered under. It's going to be not too long after that that they're going to suffer a pretty harsh persecution under Domitian. So would this advice apply then as well? So if you have a time, how about in the time of, say, a world war? If we suddenly got drawn into World War III for whatever reason, would it be a good time to get married? Not necessarily. Yet that happens to be what happens a lot. Remember, if you can see it, that a lot of men are shipping off to go to battle, and they get married right before they go into battle. But the thing is that, of course, that's a not necessarily a spiritual war, but when we're talking about distress like that, maybe it's not a good time to get married, according to Paul. You had a comment, Bill?
Yeah.
You'll pass? Okay. You said you were going to try to draw my class. Again, Paul ends this section by saying that he would spare them trouble in the flesh. It's a time when it might be better to be single if you were already single, he's saying. There's going to be persecution, and there's going to be trying times. Can a virgin get married in troubled times? At the end of verse 28, Paul says, if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. So again, he's giving us advice, and he's saying, but if you don't want to take my advice, it's not a sin to get married. And so, he's going to say this a number of times. If you've read ahead, you'll see that Paul says, nevertheless, I would spare you. And later on, he's going to say, widows, you know, they'd be happier if they didn't get remarried. Paul is thinking about what's going on, and he's giving them advice on this particular subject. And so, this section turns out to be advice on whether to remain single in troublesome times. And Paul says he would spare us, but he also says it's a sin not to marry. And he goes on and says, but this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as those who be as though they had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. But those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use this world as not misusing it, for the form of this world is passing away. How long has the form of this world been passing away? A couple thousand years, right? Is this advice still good for us? Absolutely. And in fact, if you look at this advice as to how we should approach our own lives, when he says, for instance, those who buy as though they did not possess, what does that mean to you as a Christian? It means don't get caught up in the things that you have. What did Jesus say is to lay up your treasures in heaven where moth and rust don't corrupt and where thieves don't break in and steal? What's more important, your treasure in heaven or the things that you own on earth? This is the treasure in heaven, right? And so isn't that what he's saying here? He says, you can buy, but don't act as if you possess anything. Don't act as if you're gathering all these possessions up. Don't put your faith in possessions. And when he's saying here, those who weep as though they do not weep, and those who rejoice as though they do not rejoice. What is that? That means that you should moderate yourself. You should live in moderation. You shouldn't go to these really highs and really lows. As a Christian, our joy should be in God, right? It shouldn't be in other things. It shouldn't be in our accomplishments. It shouldn't be in our jobs. It shouldn't be in stuff like that. And when we weep, oftentimes we weep for those who have passed on. Should we weep for those who are Christians who pass on? Or should we be thankful that they've gone to a better place, that they're not going to be in this persecution, that they're not going to go have trouble in this life? Now, the interesting thing here is this, he says, even those who have wives should be as though they had none. Does that mean you're supposed to ignore your wives or your husbands? Later on, he's going to talk about those who are single think about the things that are of the Lord, and those who are married think about the things of their think about the things of the world for their wife's sake or their husband's sake. So when it says those who have wives should be as though they had none, I take this to mean that you should still be putting God first in your life, and but you can't, not to the exclusion of your wife or your husband, but where should the emphasis be? In our own lives, we should be seeking God first. Now, oftentimes that means that as husbands, that we should be taking care of our wives, right? That if we don't take care of our families, what are we? We're worse than an infidel. So that doesn't let us off the hook for any of the other stuff Paul's talked about, the affection that we owe them or anything like that. But Paul's talking about in this time that you need to be careful about your own lives. You need to even treat your marriage as something that is owned by God, that you need to treat your wife in such a way that God, it's shown clearly in your life that God is number one. Do you have any comments or questions on that, Bill?
Well, again, this is because of the adversity that they were going to go through. It was very, the tribulation that was maybe especially hard. And we may go through some of that someday. We may have another civil war.
Yeah.
I mean, some people think we will.
Yeah.
We had one before.
Yeah.
Don't think it's impossible for America not to have a civil war. And during that time, maybe it would be better to follow all this. Focus strictly on being faithful to God and during the trials that are going to be.
Right. Not that we should neglect our wives, but that we should be always ready to serve God, right?
Talking about here, don't get married, the advice is, right? If you have, if you're going into some adversity, in the middle of
That's his advice, right? But he also is going to say, he also says that if you're already married, don't try to get unmarried, right? Don't try to. Let's read it first. Let's see. It's in, "Are you bound to wife? Do not seek to be loosed." We're going to cover those in more detail a little bit. Just a second, Kurt. But you're right. A lot of this has to do with this present distress. Although there's good advice in here for us even now, who aren't in distress, right? Kurt, you had a comment? That's a good point. Good point. I've got a couple of verses for you on this idea that time is short. It's compacted. The Bible uses the term vapor when it talks about our lives, here today and gone tomorrow. In God's time frame, that's what we are. We're like the marine layer that we see in the morning that burns off by noon. That's what we are. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10, it says, "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going." Solomon's there saying that if live your life as hard and as strong as possible. He says, whatever you're going to do, do it well. Romans chapter 13, verses 11 and 12 says, "And this do, knowing the time, that now is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed." And that's actually, of course, true, right? Our salvation is always nearer than when we first believed. We're a day closer to death than when we first believed. We're a day closer to heaven, so that's that idea too. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 and 16, "See then you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wives, redeeming the time because the days are evil." We waste enough time as it is. And Paul's saying, don't waste your time. He's saying the time is short. That our time in this world is short too. And even though we're not under this type of distress in our own lives right now, there may come a time when we are under that kind of distress, when this country outlaws the idea of Bible-based religion. Because it's not correct. There may come a time when persecution happens, and when that happens, we should be thinking about these kind of verses. So the time is short, And it says the form of this world is passing away. We need to moderate our weeping and moderate our joy. We need to be ready to leave everything behind. I think that's what I get from this passage. We need to, again, concentrate on God rather than the world around us. The main thrust is it applies to those who are not married and those who are, but Paul is trying to spare us heartache, which we would certainly be going through if we were in tribulation and we were married. What would be harder for you to go through in tribulation, knowing that your wife and children could be thrown to the lions? It's bad enough that you would do it, right? That they would do it to you. Isn't that what they always do in movies? They try to find your weakness, right? If you're this tough, you know, guy and you can't be defeated or whatever, they try to find your weakness. They kidnap your kid, right? Or they kidnap your wife, and then you burst into tears and you do anything that they want you to do. That's what Paul's saying here. That's an old plot device, right? And Satan uses it all the time. He uses our families and our weaknesses against us. And Paul's saying, don't let that happen. Continuing on, in verse 32 it says, but I want you to be without care. Again, that carries that thought that he wants us to be happy here. He wants us to be without care. He who is married cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord, but he who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. There's a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, how she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. That last verse is the key to this paragraph. How do you serve the Lord without distraction in this kind of time frame, or even in any time frame? I take this advice not only in this present distress, but this is valid advice for any time. If a young woman or a young man, and you've seen it, right? A young man who just wants to be a preacher, he wants to lead in worship, or a young woman who wants to serve God, and then they get a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and they get distracted by their service to God. And Paul's saying here that this is not unusual. In fact, it's not wrong for this to happen. A married woman wants to please her husband, and a husband wants to please his wife. That's the way God designed us to be. That's the way we should be. And so what happens is that that married person is a little more distracted. He's now got two focuses in his life. He's got to focus his life on God, and he's got to focus his life on his wife. And the same thing for the woman. Of course, God should be first. You know, seek the kingdom of heaven first, and all these things will be added to you. God should be first. But seeking God first does not mean that we ignore our spouses. In fact, Paul says that's what happens. Now, again, this idea that we would seek the Lord without distraction. God gives us lives to live. He says it's good that man should not be alone. He says, marriage is something that God gives us. Now, Paul rejected that for his own sake. Paul decided that he would rather serve God to the point where he didn't want to have a wife going around with him. He says he had the right for it. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. He says, do I not have the right to a believing wife, to take along a believing wife? Yes, he did have that right, but he chose to not do that. He chose to make himself a eunuch for Christ's sake, for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He chose that for himself, and he said all along here, but not everyone can do that. And so in a situation, and maybe it's better for you to remain unmarried, is what he's saying throughout here. It might be better for you to remain unmarried, especially if you want to concentrate on your life on God. Now, does that mean what the Catholic Church took that to an extreme, right? They said that priests should concentrate their lives on God, therefore they should never be married. And what happened there? It's a problem, right? They enforced that. You had a comment, Bill?
Yeah, I think the general principle is it's not good to be alone. That's back in Genesis, right?
Right.
But again, the focus on here is these extraordinary drug his family out there too, and stone, you know, and
right.
Just imagine right. being shipwrecked with your family. I mean,
yeah.
He was in a particular situation. God knew that he would be going through these very difficult hardships, and for Paul, you know, obviously granted the gift that he had self control, so he didn't have trouble with being tempted.
Right.
So he was suited for that. Having a family in that situation, how would you do that?
Yeah. Actually, I imagine from what Paul said about his flesh, that he probably was tempted. He said earlier that he does what he doesn't want to do. I think that's in Romans, right? That I believe that he probably was tempted. It's just that he was able to overcome that temptation as a man of God. That's just my thought on that. Again, there are some men who are made eunuchs, some who are born eunuchs, and some who make themselves eunuchs. And I believe that's what Paul did. Not that he may not have been tempted by it, but that he was able to overcome that because he taught against fornication and taught against adultery and all of that by the Spirit. So again, he says, I want you to be without care. Again, related to this present distress, or I look at these also as general, something that we can even apply today, if you're married, you're going to care about the things, how to please your wife, and if you're not, you can care about how to please God. Now, there's an important thing in here, and really, it says the unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord. The unmarried man cares about the things of the Lord. How they may please the Lord. It says that she may be holy in body and in spirit. Our children that aren't married should be holy in body and spirit. That should be their goal. That should be what they're striving for. We should raise our children with that in mind, that as long as you're not married, you're going to serve God. Now, how can a young woman who's not married serve God? There are all sorts of ways, right? They can make meals. They can. Later on, it's going to talk about widows. I'm going to talk about widows later on. First Timothy, Second Timothy. I can't remember which verse. It's First Timothy, I think. Says that those who are widows indeed can be taken into the number if they've done what? If they've housed strangers. If they wash the feet of the saints. If they're full of good works. That's the way a young woman could be. Right, she could wash, and a young man, they could wash the feet of the saints, and by that Paul is talking about doing service for the saints, as Scott pointed out in his lesson the other day. That's what a young woman or a young man who's a Christian should strive for. Nathan should be holy, right? He should be striving to help. And so, was he helping the other day? Yes, he was. He was at the Clark's house helping them move. That's the way you can apply this verse. You can care about the things of God. Could Nathan have done something else with this Saturday? Sorry to put you on the spot there, Nathan. Could he have done something else with this Saturday? Yes, he could have. But he didn't. He sacrificed his Saturday, right? And Cindy called him out and said that it was great that he was there. And that's great. I mean, he wasn't looking for praise, but he got it anyway. He got more, too, by the way. That doesn't negate what he did, because that's not why he did it, right? God looks at his gift, and that's what it was. And that's how young people can serve the Lord. You can mow lawns. You can take care of children. There are all sorts of things you can do, which don't seem like they're that big of a deal, but how does God look at that? As a sweet-smelling savor, right? Something that comes up to him as a sacrifice. So, he says, I want you to be without care. He says, not that I may put a leash on you. He's not trying. What's a leash do? When you're walking a dog, what does a leash do? Controls the dog, right? Well, supposedly, unless you're being pulled along by the dog. But a leash is there to tie you down. He says, I'm not trying to do that. He says, I want you to be without distraction. In fact, to make it clear, in the next verse, he says, he does not sin, let them marry. So the idea that Paul is trying to say, don't get married, I'm commanding it. He's making it clear throughout this verse that that's not what he's saying. He's saying, I'm giving you some good advice, but you can take it or leave it. I'm not trying to constrain you, is what he's saying. In verse 36, it says, but if any man thinks he is behaving improperly towards his virgin, if she is past the flower of youth, thus it must be, let them do as he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has the power over his own will, this is talking about someone like Paul again, having power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. Again, this is talking about this whole time frame, but again, this is general advice. How many of your versions say, but if a man thinks he's behaving improperly towards his virgin daughter? Does your verse say that, yours? Daughter is not in the text. Daughter is, that's an interpretation of this. Virgin, it's still the word virgin that we saw earlier. That actually puts a slightly different spin on this. There's two ways of looking at this. Either a man is behaving improperly towards the woman that he loves, and what does he say in that case? He's saying, if she's past the flower of youth, let them do his wishes, let them marry. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that a father has determined in his mind that his daughter is going to remain a virgin for her whole life. Bill. So he who gives her in marriage does well. Yeah. Father is in there. But the next verse is kind of yucky, right? If you think about that, he. Right, daughter's in italics, but it says, if a man thinks he's behaving, if this man here is the father, that makes this verse kind of yucky. Because he says, let them marry, and fathers don't marry their daughters. So the man who is behaving improperly towards his virgin in verse 36, is allowed to marry her. So again, there are two ways of looking at this, right? That you've got a husband, you've got a father who is withholding, who's telling his daughter she's going to remain a virgin, and she's in his house, she's living in his house, and that's a determination. And Paul in verse 38 supports that idea. He says, if you give her in marriage, that's okay, but if you don't, it's better, right?
That comment was whether or not the virgin in this particular application was referring to both male and female, right? Which you can't tell from the word virgin, but down in verse 38, maybe since it says her.
I think this one is referring to a female. Right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't understand. Joe.
My verse, yours says, let them marry. Mine says, let her marry.
Okay. Again, that would support the... You'd have to have that in there if you're thinking daughter in the first part. I don't know the actual word there. Terry.
Well, I'm going to throw this out there.
Throw it out there. Now this is kind of a little bit of especially the way that words are added and stuff, and again, verse 38 would seem to be there. If a man's got a daughter that is past that he's had as a virgin, she's past that age. He says it's still not a sin if they get married, right? He says but again, I take this first verse here in verse 36, a man who thinks he's behaving improperly, that could mean that he's having thoughts, he's burning with passion and towards the object of his affection, his virgin, you know, not bride because she's not his bride yet. Even older people, that happens too. He says he does not sin. Let him do as he wishes. What he wants to do is he wants to marry her. He says, he does not sin. Let them marry. Let her marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast with his heart, again, is I would take that to be the man in the first one. If he can be steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has power over his own will, this is a guy, he's going to determine to keep his own virgin, he does well. In other words, he's going to keep himself pure, he does well. So you've got a woman in the, you've got the man and the woman in the first, you've got this, verse 37 is talking about a man keeping steadfast, like Paul did. He does well. And then the last one where he says, so then he who gives her in marriage does well. I mean, it's good to give your daughter in marriage, isn't it? And then again, if you're thinking about this kind of a time frame, present distress, he who does not give her in marriage does better. So those of us who have virgin daughters and don't give them in marriage, we're doing really well, right? actually, I'd rather see my daughter married. I think that would make her more happy. But Don, did you have a comment? In the current distress. And I think that kind of overshadows this whole section. Why would it be better for a woman not to get married? Or a man not to get married? Why would it be better? Paul's already said it. Because they can concentrate on what God wants instead of concentrate on having a family or having taking care of your kids or taking care of a house. That's what Paul's saying. It would be better that way. Bill.
But of course, the trade-off is loneliness.
The trade-off is loneliness. You have to be able to handle that kind of thing.
You have to have the capability sexually to be able to go to not to be tempted.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but being alone is not something, from the beginning of time, it was ever something that God said was good.
Right. So this is one of those situations where, on one hand, God says that it's not good for man to be alone. On the other hand, Paul's saying it might be better if you were alone.
Exception.
Right? There's an exception here, right? And what's the only exception to, what's the exception to not, that it's not good for man to be alone? If you want to dedicate your life to serving God. Paul chose to do that on his own. He chose not to have a wife. He chose to go. Now, Peter, on the other hand, did Peter have a wife? Yes, he did. And in fact, he said that he took, apparently they took them along with them, like Paul said that he had the right to do. He says, do I not have the right to take along a believing wife like Peter and the other apostles? Of course he does. He chose not to. And he chose not to. So what happened to Peter's wife when Peter got killed? Because Jesus said there's going to come a time in your life when you're going to be taken where you don't want to go, and you're going to do things that you don't want to do. What happened to Mrs. Peter? We don't know, right? But you can imagine that it wasn't easy. If she was still alive, it wasn't going to be easy on her, seeing her, just like it wasn't easy on Mary, seeing her son on a cross. It's not going to be easy on Mrs. Peter to see her husband on a cross. If that is indeed how he died. Anyway, that ends this section here on this. Any comments on this particular? Again, I think that what Paul's saying here is if you can serve God, do it. If it means that you serve God better without being married, you can do that. Not to the exclusion. Can we serve God while we're being married? Yes, we can. In fact, what's interesting about this is that an elder or a deacon have to be married. So could Paul ever be an elder? Absolutely not. Of course, he was an apostle. That kind of overrides being an elder. But he couldn't be an elder. He couldn't be a deacon. Is it better for an evangelist to be married? Can you be an evangelist without being married? Yes, you can. It might be better if you were married. I think the Catholic Church has shown that priests don't do well when marriage is where non-marriage is enforced like that. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think you'd probably go without your family, right? again, the idea here is that you can be single if serving the Lord is more important to you than being lonely, I think. So I just turned the page on my notes, and I didn't mean to. Embedded in this section, what is that? That is not supposed to be there. Where did my? I must have a. Did you get the right slides? I know I saved it. Okay, we'll do this by hand. embedded in that section in verses 27 and 28, if you want to read it with me, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. If a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you. While we're treating this as a separate drawer in this, it's kind of embedded in the, it's stuck in the section on single people. So Paul is describing virgins in the prior section, when we just didn't. But he also addresses those who are divorced or thinking about it in this section. So are divorced people single people? It depends, right, on whether you've been divorced for cause or not. If you've been divorced for cause, it's my understanding that you are single. So what we said before is, as being good advice and not a commandment applies here too. Again, you could argue that this is specifically speaking of time of distress, but we believe this is a general declaration and applies really to all times. In other words, whether it's Paul's advice or not. Paul says it's good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Don't seek to be loosed. Are you loose from a wife? Don't seek to be bound. Now, a couple of things to note here. Bound is definitely a word Paul uses for being married. He uses it down in verse 39. He says a woman is bound to her husband. So in this particular case, bound equals married. I think you can see that, right? Are you bound to a wife? Are you married to a wife? Don't seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Don't seek to be bound. So what does loosed mean in this passage? Divorced, right? It's another synonym for divorce. Are you loosed from a wife? Don't seek to be married. And so we just want to make that clear. Go ahead.
Possibly a deceased spouse, right?
It could be, although he's going to address widows separately. Yeah. I don't think he uses the word loose there. I think he says, it's in my slide. Let's see. Do I have it in my slide? Do I have it in my notes? I always put the scriptures in my notes. I don't have it in my notes. So I'll open my Bible to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Actually, you're talking about Romans 7. Let's look at Romans 7 real quick. If he uses the word loosed there. He uses the word bound there, but it's also, I had it in my notes, verse 39, if you want to look down there, it says a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives, but if a husband dies, she is at liberty to be married. Again, the idea of being loosed is liberty, right? Turn over to Luke chapter 13, if you will. Now, I do have this in my notes. Luke chapter 13, this kind of illustrates this point. In verse 10, it says, Now he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bent over and could no ways raise herself up. But when Jesus saw her, he called her to him and said, Woman, you are loosed from your infirmity. And he laid hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. But the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, and he said to the crowd, There are 6 days on which men ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not on the Sabbath day. And Jesus answered and said to him, Hypocrite, does not each of you on the Sabbath loose his own ox or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it? So ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, think of it, for these 18 years, be loosed from the bond on the Sabbath? And when he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and all the multitude rejoiced at the glorious things that were done by him. The same words that are used in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 are used in Luke chapter 13. The idea of being bound means to be constrained. And how is a woman constrained to a husband? By law, by their vows, by their marriage. That's the idea, is that you're bound to your husband that way. You're constrained. And it's not in a bad way. It's in a good way, right? And how are you loosed? When Jesus loosed her, she was free from that binding. And that kind of illustrates the point that we're talking about here. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek to be bound. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Those terms, again, are synonymous with the idea of being married or being divorced. But again, Paul's saying that not to make big changes in these times of distress. He's saying that, you know, because of the stresses, distress is going to happen. Don't divorce your wife. And he's saying in the case of distress, don't get married. In fact, he's saying that because he wants to spare them, right? It's all in the same thing. Now, one thing I find interesting. Do not be loosed is pretty clear. Again, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and I'll go back there. He says, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. One thing I find interesting there is that he says about those loosed from a wife. Who's he speaking of here? Who's been loosed from a wife? Now, it could be, as Bill was saying, someone who's no longer married because they've been widowed. But in a divorce situation, who gets loosed? Usually the one who sins, right? Now, maybe I'm taking that too literally. But in a situation of a divorce, the one who's loosed is usually the one who is put away, if I'm using those synonymously, the put-away party. This would maybe be another argument, unless I'm taking it too literally. Maybe he's just meaning that the one, a person, instead of saying one who is loosed from a wife, just the person who's no longer married. If you're taking it very literally, it's the person who has been loosed from a wife, is what it says. Go ahead.
Wouldn't the one putting away someone for fornication also be loosed?
They would. But in that situation, we've already covered the idea that that person is able to remarry. I should have included this in the section on the guilty party remarrying or the party who's been sinned. Usually the person who's loosed from another spouse is the person who's been put away. Now, maybe, again, I'm taking that too literally, and it's just talking about someone who's no longer married. And that could be someone who's divorced and someone who's widowed. Now, the one thing that if you believe that the put-away sinner can't remarry, then you know that this is only talking about the person, the party who's sinned against. If you're on the other side of the fence, you believe that both parties who have been loosed from a marriage, and you're only loosed from a marriage if there's fornication involved, and one party puts the other one away. We're not talking about the ones that are in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 10 and 11, where there's no sin involved. We're talking about a marriage that's been wrecked by fornication. In that instance, it would appear to me that either party can remarry here. Now, again, if you believe that the guilty party can't remarry, then you're going to say this doesn't include the guilty party. You're only talking about the innocent party here. I don't think that the Bible's making that differentiation here. But again, I could be wrong on that. So when Paul covers that, the key here in verse 28, even if you do marry, you have not sinned. Of course, everyone believes that the innocent party, well, if you didn't believe that the innocent party could remarry, this verse would speak otherwise. So there are those who believe in a divorce that neither party, even for fornication, that either party can get remarried. There are people who believe that you cannot do that. This verse says otherwise, because how would you be loose from a marriage? And again, he's going to talk about widows later on. How could you be loose from a marriage if there wasn't a divorce involved? Someone can get remarried, right? That would speak against that idea anyway. Again, whether you believe that the guilty party or the party whose sins can get remarried will color how you look at this verse. But the way I understand it is that either party can get remarried if there's fornication involved. Now, again, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, sorry, verse 7, verse 10 and 11 would say that those who put away for not for fornication, and Matthew 19 would say the same thing, can't get remarried. So someone here who gets married, again, doesn't sin. Again, this definitely proves that at least the sinned against party can remarry without sin. That's just a short little section on divorce there. We've actually covered these verses all throughout the discussion. That's really all I have to say about that, unless you, and my slides are blank, so I don't have anything else to say about that. The Bible would make it clear that at least one of the parties in the divorce can get remarried without sinning. Let's move on to the last section, and I have 5 minutes to cover the widows, and that shouldn't be very hard. Verse 39 and 40. A wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives, but if her husband dies, she is at liberty to marry whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment, and I think I also have the Spirit of God. Again, this is like the third time Paul says, take my advice. And, you know, I believe that God's with me on this. Is it a commandment? No. Can a widow get remarried? Absolutely. But there's a caveat here, right? We're talking about a Christian woman, right? There's a caveat here. He says, only in the Lord. And we should look at that a little bit. Again, this is the last file cabinet here. In verses 8 and 9, he said, to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them to remain even as I am. This would agree with this idea here, right? But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it's better to marry than to burn. So widows fall into the same category as those who are unmarried. And it says if they can't contain themselves, they should get married. So Paul says something similar, the same idea here. It's good for them to remain as he is. Again, whether you take this to be in the present distress or not, or as a general admonition, Paul says here she's going to be happier if she remains as he is. Now, why is it possible for her to remain happier if she remains as she is, keeping in mind that she's not burning with passion? There is at least one widow in the Old Testament who served God day and night in the temple. Who was that? Anna. Yeah, pardon me? Yeah, Anna served God day and night offering up prayers for the saints, right? Her prayers. Isn't that the same idea here? That a woman can devote her life, even after she's married and had kids and stuff, she can devote her life to God. And Paul's saying, if she can remain as I am, she's going to be happier. But and why might she not want to remain as he is? It could be it could be economics, right? She may not be able to support herself. Maybe she's well enough off that she doesn't need to be supported, or maybe she has a family that can take care of her. Perhaps she's a widow indeed and can devote herself to the work of the church. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 11 through 16, Paul says something a little bit different about younger widows. And he says, but refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation, and he's talking about refusing them from being a widow indeed, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides that, they learn to be idle, wandering from house to house, and not idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, and give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan. If any believing man or woman has widows, let him relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened that it may relieve those who are really widows. It says that the younger widows should bear children, manage the house, and give not opportunity for the adversary to speak reproachfully. I guess that's like a case of idle hands, I guess, right? And that's what he's saying about younger widows in 1 Timothy. He's saying, don't support them by the church. Let them get married. Let them have kids. Let them Let them manage a house. He's saying it's better for them to do that than to be supported by the church and go from house to house and be gossips. Not that all women are gossips, obviously, but that... and he says, again, he says that she's at liberty, she's at free to marry whomever she wishes, again, but only in the Lord. And I see, again, with this idea with a widow, that a Christian should only marry a Christian. And Paul's specifically saying that here with widows. Again, is that advice or a commandment? And that's going to be kind of for you to decide. I think that 2 Corinthians 8 says that it's more of a commandment that you marry only a Christian, to not be unequally yoked. That's really the class. Terry.
Should this be viewed also in the time of the current distress?
Again, you could look at it that way. You could. I think that applying this current distress to the entire chapter is a mistake. I think that that it could, but I think that the advice withstands time, and we can even a time with not distress. If a widow can devote herself to God, it might. Paul's saying she might be happier than if she gets remarried. Now, this is specifically talking about widows. It's not talking about widowers. Men are lost without women, right? So men are always, they just get remarried anyway. But not necessarily. But anyway, again, as when we first came into the class, we said that this is a difficult subject. In fact, some have suggested that I spent way too long on a negative, difficult subject. And I'm sorry for that. But I thought it was appropriate to go into some of the background thinking of how we've been studying this out. If you have a different opinion of this, or if you have scriptures that we haven't thought of, we want you to come and tell us. We want to understand. We want to have the best understanding of this stuff as we can, because we want to be right with God. I will tell you, Bill and I are not as ready to bind things on people where there are possibly more than one understanding of some of these verses. Because we don't want to be accused of binding things that God has not bound. So in this situation of, like I said, in this situation where it says, do not get divorced, but you know, if you do get divorced, remain unmarried. We'll that's pretty clear. Now the question of whether or not you're sinning when you do that, we kind of fall on both sides of the fence on that one. Jeff. And again, perhaps you believe that the party who sins against can't remarry. That seems to be one of the bigger sticking points. If you have scriptures that we don't know about, come and tell us. What I hope is that with the discussion, you understand that there are, and I understand this, there are two ways of looking at some of these scriptures, and two honest Christians could have different opinions on what those scriptures say. And I think that we can live together in that. Bill.
I too appreciate you know the approach and the attitude. You know, I want to give an illustration. This last week we had a situation where a young boy that has an attitude came speeding through our neighborhood, and he does it all the time. One of the neighbors had his fill of it, went down and asked him nicely if he would not do that. The kids were playing, so totally, you know, he was well within his right to ask that. That the kid had the attitude, didn't like it, and the kid noticed that the neighbor was a concealed carry person, and he had his weapon, you know, on his waistband. And so what was a very simple, no problem issue, it ended up in the man getting arrested. And the man is as fine a neighbor as you want to have. And it escalated into something that, never should have, but it did. And the point is that we can be possibly right in what we're doing, but the attitude that we have causes the sin and causes the stumbling. And we've all seen situations in churches where people take positions on issues that clearly are, in my opinion, they need to work out their own salvation between them and God. Mm-hmm. And they end up siding, you know, getting sides here and sides there. It ends up doing more damage to God's body than maybe we ever intended. So we need to really...
The last thing we want to do is divide the congregation on this, right? And it was only with a little bit of trepidation that we even did this subject, because we know it's a divisive subject. But we thought it was good to explore it a little bit. Again, if you've got thoughts or something, you want to study it separately, if you want a copy of my notes, I'll give them to you. I'll give you a copy of my slides if you want. You have at them. You know, it's up to you if you want to study it more in depth. Jeff.
Well, we didn't divide. We're still unified. It was a very scholarly subject, and so I appreciate it. Do we know what's next week?
So next week, Mike Franklin is going to fill in for about 3 weeks, I think. He's got a subject that he told me what it was, and I can't remember. I think it's on evangelism. But he's got a subject for 3 weeks, and then after that, Scott Sousa is going to either do the Book of James or the Life of Christ, and I'm not sure which one he chose. So I look forward to both of those, and I think that Scott, if he does the Life of Christ, is going to take him all the way through the end of the year, and then Joel is going to come in and talk about the parables of Christ. So we're going to get some good New Testament teaching here in the next couple of months. So thank you for your attention, and I'm sorry for going late.